Hello and welcome to African Media. I'm Brenna Daldorf. Today we're going to talk about the founders of Somali Faces, a project meant to tell the stories of everyday Somalis. But first, we take a look at a press freedom case that's close to home for our newsroom. On Friday, November 4th, the signal for RFI was cut in Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as well as in the city of Lubumbashi. The signal in Lubumbashi was reestablished on Sunday. However, a week later, there's still radio silence, so to speak, in the Congolese capital. The RFI signal was cut late Friday or early Saturday. The UN-sponsored Radio Okapi was also jammed at the same time. This occurred ahead of a protest march organized by the political opposition. The protest against President Joseph Kabila was banned by authorities, and on Saturday morning, a huge police presence was deployed across the capital. The authorities' interference with broadcasts isn't new. Over the past 2 years, authorities have consistently jammed the airwaves on days when there are protests against Kabila. So initially, people thought that RFI's signal might be reestablished after the march. However, it wasn't. This is the first time the signal has been cut for an extensive period, since 2009, when RFI had no signal for about 18 months. Several days ago, RFI reported that government spokesperson Lambert Mende said that the signal had been cut because RFI had shared a message from the opposition that defied measures of security and public order. Just this Thursday, the Congolese government said it wanted to revisit its agreement with the French radio before restoring the signal. Authorities also said they had sent a letter to RFI asking to start discussions. RFI leadership denied receiving such a letter. RFI is the most widely listened to radio in the DRC, where radio is king of media. Journalistes en Danger is an independent organization based in Kinshasa that promotes press freedom. Chivas Chivuadi is one of the founders.
We denounce the climate of insecurity that journalists are working in. We consider the closure of media, especially the most listened to media like RFI and Okapi, only increases political tension. We wrote an open letter to the Vice Prime Minister and the Interior Minister to denounce what we considered to be grave violations of liberty of information. We denounce this desire to muzzle the press.
He described how people in Kinshasa are reacting to the cut.
For the past week, the fact that the signals have been cut at these two radios has been a topic of debate and conversation. People find the decision irrational because in Kinshasa you can still listen to RFI by tuning into broadcasts from Brazzaville. They want to tune into these medias because that's how they get their information about news and the burning questions of the day.
People are also listening to RFI via smartphone applications or online. Chivuadi says that the muzzling of RFI is worrying in the lead up to December 20th. That's when Kabila's second mandate is up. The Congolese constitution forbids him from running for another term. However, Kabila seems to be doing what he can to stall elections. Already, he's tried to delay elections until April 2018. The opposition has demanded that they be held in 2017 at the very latest. So, as December approaches, tension between the ruling party and the opposition is increasing. It's widely feared that the end to Kabila's mandate will be marked by violence and government repression. Many people are looking back to 2011, when there was rioting after Kabila won a contested election. The country has since been in political crisis. It looks even hotter this year. Violence already broke out in September when the Congolese opposition held a protest to mark 3 months until the end of Kabila's mandate. RFI's special envoy was arrested brutally during the protest and had to return to France for medical treatment. Chivuadi says this is far from the only case of violence or repression against journalists in the DRC. The country ranks 152nd in the Reporters Without Borders Index of Press Freedom. He fears it will only get worse as December approaches.
I think the biggest risk for the media are security risks for the journalists. Since the beginning of the year, we've already documented more than 90 attacks on the media. Most of these attacks were carried out by security forces who act openly. They enjoy total impunity, even though they violate guaranteed liberties. That worries us. We think we will end up recording many more cases of attack, assault, or threats.
de cas d'attaque ou d'agression ou de menace.
A committee from the UN Security Council traveled to Kinshasa Friday for a three-day visit. Human Rights Watch has called on the delegation to denounce political repression. Shivuadi hopes the delegation may pressure authorities to allow RFI back on air and push for measures to protect journalists. We'll have to wait and see. For now, people in Kinshasa will have to seek other ways to tune into RFI. Now, on to our next story. Most of the time, when you hear about Somalia in the media, it's often in a negative light. For example, if you check out the last five articles on the Reuters news agency, they're about airstrikes, a measles outbreak, Somali pirate attacks, and Somali refugees. However, two young photographers who grew up in the Somali diaspora are seeking to change that narrative with a project they call Somali Faces. I spoke with Mohamed Ibrahim Shire, who is co-founder of the project.
Yeah, my name is Mohamed Ibrahim Shire. I run the Somali Faces project with Donya Jamal Aden, a platform where we exhibit the everyday extraordinary Somali stories. What we do is we gather and collect stories from Somalis all over the world, and then we post on a daily basis. On our Facebook page, we got over 50,000 followers.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about the origins of this project.
What we've been doing is, before we actually started broadcasting these stories, we've been interviewing a lot of Somalis. And we saw that these stories were quite amazing and somehow challenged the familiar narrative of Somalis as pirates, as terrorists, as warmongering people. All my life, I grew up in Europe, and similar, Donya, she grew up in Australia. Now, we grew up with this negative perception about Somalis. We dealt with it personally as well. And obviously, once we visited back home a couple of times, we saw that wasn't always the case. Majority of Somalis are quite peace-loving, and somehow their story never gets told. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to basically reclaim that narrative back.
Yeah, because it seems like your project is kind of twofold. Like, you've also said that it's also directed to kind of bring the community together.
Yeah, the thing is with Somalis, because the thing is Somalis is such a scattered community. I mean, there's a huge Somali population in the Western world, in Africa as well, outside Somalia. Now, what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring these people together, these people that haven't got a clue what the ordinary Somali in Somalia is going through, or what the ordinary Somali in, let's say, in Europe is going through.
Doing this project, doing Somali Faces, has been a personal journey for you, too.
Yeah, when I arrived in Mogadishu, I think it was less than 24 hours, I was staying at this hotel called SYL Hotel. Now, what happened was, while I was in the hotel, this truck laden with explosives rammed into the front gate and basically knocked down the whole building and the front part of the building. I think over 40 people died. We were inside, you know, the roof came down. Thank God, you know, nothing happened to me, but all the limbs on the ground when we went to the front gate. I saw people fleeing, people with, you know, a lot of blood on their face and their hands screaming. It was a weird experience as a Somali that grew up in the diaspora to actually witness that. And I came obviously with the aim to collect stories, to collect the Somali narratives. But at the same time, you also be dealing with that side of the story as well. I was in Mogadishu for a week after the explosive happened, after that suicide bomber rammed into the hotel, and I still managed to collect some amazing stories. But there's also the ugly side, which is, you know, these people have to go through that type of, you know, bombings and terrorism on a daily basis, yet they seem to be going forward.
So, you know, this kind of fits with that experience, but one of my questions was, how has it changed you, do you think?
In a way, it reinforces my identity as a Somali. Like I said, I grew up in Holland.
Tell me about some of the people who you've met.
There was this young girl who lost both of her arms while she was a young girl. I think it was because of a hidden bomb that suddenly exploded while they were playing with it. And she said, as a young kid, I used to watch other children going to school. So what I did was I asked my father to buy me a notepad and a pen. And she said, every day I was trying to, you know, copy my name until I finally perfected it. And then she said, once my father saw that I managed to copyright it, he enrolled me into a school. And now she's a young lady. She just finished her university. She can write perfectly. She can read perfectly. And you would never guess that, you know, she had to overcome the hurdle. It was quite an amazing story to hear. And I think we recently posted her story and it had such a good feedback. It inspired a lot of people.
You can check out Somali Faces on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr. It's full of inspiring and amazing stories and portraits. It makes me teary every time. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Brenna Daldorf. Stay tuned.